C4. Number 18B.
Well, this second part also shows something which the first part wouldn't say, that it's full of the command, we must, we should, let us. It's all these imperatives, so to say, that call for an improvement of the human consciousness and life. You must, you should, you have to. That runs right through that second part. And one feels here very much how the divine must have an impact on the human, and that the human really should try to conform to that divine impact. The absolutists, in a way, are very inhuman. They always ask the students to take a position which they have not reached. And that's inhuman. Whereas Mrs. Eddy is very human. She always shows the aim, but also the way to it. She shows really heaven, but also the ladder that is let down from heaven, and you can go up rung by rung into heaven. She's so human and humane, without losing her scientific background. Now, if we take the epitomes of the second part, you have them in front of you now, then we can see what she means by this step-by-step development in regard to scientific consciousness. Just in that regard. Not like in marriage, where we also had an improvement. Here it is all that has to do with how to understand scientifically. What can we do? What qualities are necessary within us in order to have a better scientific understanding? See, the first part wouldn't say that. The first part said, here is mind, you can be one with mind, and as you are one with mind, you can know as mind knows. But not so in the second part. Here mind says that what is necessary is spiritual education of human thought. The text is full of these educators. See now, in divine mind we don't need an educator. So in the first part we don't need an educator. The divine mind is mind, and if we have that mind, we have the mind of Christ. That's that. And we work with the mind of Christ. But when we have to translate it to the human plane of living, then that mind of Christ must translate itself to the human plane as educating human thought. She speaks about the teachers, the doctors, the clergymen, the mothers, the educators. Can you hear? All those who have an educating influence on others. And she shows that teachers should uplift the pupil's thought, that doctors should be wise spiritual guides. You see how human it is, and yet how positive, how divine, huh? How the divine touch of the human is shown here. That clergymen should exalt the congregation to higher concepts. Again, educating. That the mothers and educators should entertain only one mind. So here we have the mind of Christ of the first part translated to a scientific consciousness in the human, which says, all right, educate human thought by always lifting it up, by always strengthening it, by guiding wisely, by filling your thought and the thought of the students more and more with the one mind. So it shows that if the moment we get into touch with other people, when we get away from the quiet hour where we just filled our mind with the one mind, where we have to talk to people, where you have to lead people, where you have to inspire people, you have to use a scientific method, a scientific consciousness. But that scientific consciousness, the moment it's translated to the human, is something else or has another form than the mind of Christ. It translates itself into the form of trying to lift up the thought of the people, of strengthening really the wise guidings of everybody. And so we have these educators. Each one actually is an educator to the next one. No matter if you are a teacher or a clergyman or a mother or not, each one actually is, if he has a Christian attitude, is an educator for the next one. He wants to help the other one. He wants to guide the other one. He wants that the other one gets a spiritual uplift. So it isn't just restricted to some jobs like teachers and doctors and clergymen. It's actually for everyone here. The second quality of spirit, something we have never encountered up to now neither, namely that it says what is necessary in order really to culture scientific consciousness in the human is spiritual receptiveness of human thought. Receptiveness is a quality of spirit, taking it in, reflecting it, conceiving of it. This is the birth of spirit. It has all to do with those spiritual qualities. What is spiritual receptiveness? And again, you can hear the humanity of this part. She says, be unprejudiced like a child. Have that childlike attitude which does not approach everything already with a consciousness that says, no, that's not good, I know better. The child has a sense, oh, such a big world comes to me. Every day is a new world is presenting itself to me. I just take it in, I sip it in. It hasn't that attitude of rejecting constantly what comes to his mind. It sucks it in. That's the receptiveness. Actually, a wonderful quality which you American people still have. We don't have it anymore in Europe, you know. We have to culture it anew. But you still have it in a much greater way than we over in Europe. You still feel the world is open. It's still the new frontier. You still accept new ideas or investigate new ideas. You don't approach it already with a critical, negative attitude. Over in Europe, the moment you hear something that does not fit into the old system, the old model of thinking, well, let's be critical, let's, you see, we are that way. And so we have to culture ourselves into that receptiveness of being absolutely open for the new, unprejudiced like a child, she says, receptive to the good. Just come out from the world and be separate. Can you see the separation again? So to be receptive for the spiritual. Soul has again another touch here when it comes to the human. It is the willingness to transform human thought. To be willing to be reformed, to transform, to think differently than before, to change, and not to get into ruts of thinking. The command here is to turn from self to soul, to turn from the material to the spiritual, to turn from the imperfect to the perfect. You know, soul is that which leads from sense to soul. It is that which is willing to exchange something for something else, to exchange the wrong for the right. This is a terrific quality that we need. To constantly feel at the point of letting ourselves be transformed. Not only in the body, not only there where we like to be transformed out of sickness into health, there we accept it very hopefully and gladly, but to transform thought. That's much more difficult. People don't like to change their thoughts. principle, the fourth subject. Again, you can see the human application. It is demonstration through scientific interpretation. She asks us here to take always the standpoint of principle, to forsake superstition, to forsake speculation, to forsake really the wrong calculus, to be willing that if we have that willingness to change our thought, that we are also willing to go out from a principle and interpret the universe from its principle, no more through speculative theories and opinions and common sense interpretation, what is done and what is not done, and so on. This is a scientific attitude. So up to now we had what, just to recapitulate it and see what Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out. She wants to bring out really our attitude in human life, not in the divine life. Our attitude in human life, how it can help, say, the human resistance to give itself up so as to accept the scientific attitude. So the very first point is that we try to educate ourselves along new thoughts. Second, to cultivate, so to say, our receptivity for new thoughts. Then third, to cultivate within ourselves the willingness to change and to reform thoughts, to take on another standpoint in principle. Then she comes to the fifth subject, life, and says, actually, this is scientific in the human. When you are willing to live in the nowness and newness of life, and not only in theory but in practice. So if you believe in the nowness and newness of life, then you also must, in the human, act accordingly. You must use completely different attitudes, namely not to talk about age, about birthdays, birthday parties. You know, anniversaries. Birth anniversaries, wedding anniversaries. And they come, these anniversaries, all time concept, so as to build up in consciousness really good and hard that we are getting older. Well, that newness of life, she said, that we should shape our views of existence into loveliness, freshness, and continuity. More or less saying, always entertain much more that which is the new than the old ruts. Get out of the old ruts. Get into the newness of life. Don't get back to the old flesh pots. Look for the beautiful and good in life. I wonder what would happen if you would send this sentence to all the newspapers in the world and would say, look out for the good in life and for the new in life. They always look out for the bad in life. It pays apparently only to bring to the notice of the people what has happened in a bad way. She shows, never lose sight of loveliness. See, these are very practical methods. And actually, I think they must be combined with a must and thou shalt, because otherwise we are always confronted not with the loveliness of life, but how life is dreary and wearing out and how bad it is and so on. And it is really quite a discipline to culture within ourselves that scientific attitude to see also the good in something, that we can afterwards perceive that only the good is happening, that there is always a blessing in anything, that we are sometimes just overwhelmed by a news or by something that happens, and it takes us some time to pull up our socks and say, now, come on, what's happening? Is there anything else happening but the method of life, the newness of life, the loveliness of life? Can't you see also a blessing in what happens? This is a great, great method, and it takes some training and it takes some culturing. In truth, really nice point here that it asks us to awaken to spiritual consciousness of our true ego, that we awake there from the Adam dream and awake to recognize our true divine ego, the ego man as a reflection of the ego God, where we have perfect models of men, where we have true ideals of our manhood, of our selfhood. Here you get the whole sense of a true ideal to which, at which to look. To have always an ideal sense of men about us and men in general. Because otherwise we always like to have a depressed sense about us, a mortal sense about men, a rotten sense about men. We are never good enough, you know. We always criticize ourselves. We always see the negative sense of ourselves. I always say we are so good to our doggies and to our cats and so on. They are always darlings. We pet them, we talk to them. Only the best word are good enough and the best piece of meat is good enough. We never scold them, we never do anything. If we would treat ourselves as well as we do treat our dogs, we really would be well off. If we constantly would say to ourselves, now you are a really jolly good fellow, you know, you really are a darling, you really are really the best of everything, you know, you really are fine, you have done wonderful today, how nice it was for you to do this and that and the other. That's why, I guess, how one talks to a dog anyway, that's the way I would talk to a dog. Really, I do. But to us, how do we talk to us? This is what Mrs. Eddy means here. that we awake not to our Adam selfhood, but to our true man selfhood, our true ego. If we would do that, we would really stand always in awe before our selfhood. We would just feel how big our true selfhood is. How mighty our true selfhood is. What a Christ our selfhood is. What a blessing we are for the world. We hardly can do that because we feel that's not right. You see, a Christian is very meek and very humble. Huh? And so he shouldn't feel that way. He should feel very small and very low and a great sinner and no good at all. Huh? Because all that he can do is that he's a sinner. In science, we should build up that consciousness of our true ego and admire that true ego and stand in awe before that true ego. And if we do it, we really get somewhere. Yes. The last tone, love, is when the human self learns its own falsity, then perfection is won. This last subject is very, very nice. If you read it in the text, then at home, you will feel how the very first thing is really to empty our vessels first and to see, to recognize the nothingness, really, of mortal mind. To recognize, really, that belief is not understanding. And to recognize that the sense testimony really is not soul testimony. To recognize first that the unscientific approach is just nothing. And only then when we can do that, when we can recognize the nothingness of the unscientific attitude, only then really we have the way open to accept perfection. And we can win perfection. Yes, these are the seven subject, you could see, they all have to do with the human education, so to say, of right scientific consciousness, something that everybody can do. Nobody can say, I cannot educate thought spiritually. We all have a chance either to educate it material or spiritually. To be receptive, it's just a matter of culturing our receptivity for the good, for the spiritual. Everybody can, if he wants, transform his models of thought and can undergo thought transformation. Everybody can say, I begin to interpret every incident from principle instead of from a personal point of view. Everybody can have the newness of life and think instead of time to think in eternity, not to think about all the things that make us limited, that pin us down to age and decay. Everybody can awake himself to contemplating himself as a spiritual ego and not as a material, corporeal ego. Everybody can do that and see the Son of God in him instead of seeing the Adam in him. Everybody can do that. See, those human footsteps are really footsteps that everybody can make. You don't ask something that is above the possibility of a beginner. Yeah. So here we have those two parts, and if at home you take a piece of paper and we'll put those two parts side by side and see what is said in the first part about mind and then in the second part about mind, you really can see the great difference. See, in the first part, mind said, what we need is the knowledge of the divine mind. In the second part, it just says, educate thought spiritually. It's an education of thought. The first part, it was the knowledge of the divine mind. In spirit, it was so clear. The first part shows that we should understand the spiritual facts and learn the language of spirit, the calculus of spirit. Translated to the human, it says, be receptive for the spiritual. Quite different, can you see? And so in soul, we have, in the first part, we have the senses of soul, that should really teach us, that would be a scientific attitude, to have the sense of soul, the spiritual understanding of soul, instead of the testimonies of physical senses. Translated to the human, it says, be willing to exchange, to transform your wrong thoughts against the true thoughts. Have the willingness of change, of reform in thought. In the first part, principle says, have a scientific attitude built on a principle. And in the second part, it says, therefore, don't interpret things according to a personal opinion. In life, you have that terrific sense that it gives that you use the methods of life. What are the methods of life in the human? It's not counting our days and not counting our years and not counting our age. It's not looking at depravity. It's not looking at that which is destructive. It's looking at the loveliness of life. It's looking always for the good in every situation. This is life in the human. And so in truth, we see that truth in the first part is the liberator from our mortal consciousness. All right, if we can liberate ourselves from mortal consciousness in the human, which Oliver can say, all right, I'm no more going to contemplate me as an Adam, I'm going to see myself as the Son of God, as the one divine ego. And in the seventh, we can see the first part, love says, don't give room to disharmony. Love is fulfilled, there is no room for disharmony. That's your scientific consciousness. Translated down to the human, we see that the human is absolutely insufficient to get us anywhere. And we first have an insight into the insufficiency of human understanding. That's the chapter on footsteps of truth. There are footsteps, first in the first part, divine footsteps, we have seen. In the second part, the human footsteps leading to perfection. Yes. Well, that's the chapter on footsteps of truth.